Big edition of The Breakfast Club. It's great to have your company. If you missed any of the good stuff, here's a snippet of what we did.
Lots to get through this morning. A jam-packed edition, Adam White. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Daniel. I'm really looking forward to catching up with Ash Barty. She's one of my favourites and so excited about what she did in Birmingham and got me off to a really bad start to the week because of the lack of sleep.
You look remarkably fresh.
Oh, yeah, I'm an athlete. For
a lack of sleep athlete.
Yeah, but no, looking forward to catching up with her because she's now up to 54 in the world. And yes. And going with a rocket in the right direction. So, good to catch up with her.
We do like rockets in the right direction. Jimmy Bartels, our very own rocket here in the Breakfast Club. He's always in the right direction. Good morning, Jim.
Morning. Rocket and myself have never been associated together. It's more slow-moving sloth is more the apt description.
Iceberg activity?
Yeah, I'm very much an iceberg of an athlete. I just slow moving, cumbersome.
Good in the wet?
Yeah, wet. I'll take that. Yeah. Take that. But look, let's give credit where it's due. Whitey is an elite athlete when it comes to sport watching ability.
Oh, mate.
He's one of the greatest I've ever met.
I've never met anyone better. It's extraordinary the amount of content he can consume.
He's disciplined. He's focused. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Ask me in a few months' time. Ask me in a few months' time when we get to the end of the European season.
The European summer is killing me, and you are fresh.
You have no off-season, let's be honest. You do the European summer, and then we're into spring carnival.
Well, at least that's in our time zone. The spring carnival and then the Australian summer is in our time zone. We can work with that. This European stuff is no good for anyone apart from Adam White.
I think you're underselling his ability here.
No, absolutely not.
It's an extraordinary amount of fatigue.
Still early. It's still early. It's still early. Let's see how we're tracking in a couple of months' time.
We hear this.
Quarter past six on Monday morning. I'd be disappointed if that happened.
Yes. Suggestions would be that that's what Emma deals with at any time of the day. Anyway.
About quarter past two in the afternoon?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
How are you, Huff?
Going gangbusters.
Let's ask about you. How are you?
No one cares about me. It's all right. We've got stuff to talk about. No one cares about me, Jim.
People care about Jimmy.
Because we care about Jim.
What have I done?
Yesterday, you destroyed the game again. It was your weekly opportunity to do so, and you didn't fail to disappoint. Now,
Wow. I'm going back to bed now. What do I get up for this for? No.
The
what
MRP
have I done now?
Situation yesterday, we had a lot of charges. We were busy yesterday. There was a lot going on.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit silly.
I saw Hayden Ballantyne featured in his first game back for however long it was for Ballas. He just finds a way to get involved, doesn't he? Little Ballas.
Yeah, he packs his boots, puts his mouth guard and ticks the box for the MRP.
Speaking of box ticking, that's what you had to do a fair bit of yesterday. Yeah. The Bashir-Hooley situation, we discussed it yesterday without you getting heavily involved,
but now you can say
a little bit more. How extensive was the debate for careless or intentional yesterday?
Yeah, it was pretty extensive. We went all the way through it, but we felt it was intentional and high. And as we just said, as soon as you tick those boxes, it goes to the tribunal, which I think it's good for all parties. I think it gives Bashir a chance to explain what he was thinking in that situation, and he can go through it and let the tribunal decide.
I think it's the right outcome. I think the tribunal was always where it should have been for this situation, because it's unique. We don't get this sort of stuff anymore in footy, which is a good thing, but it certainly needs to be dealt with appropriately, and I think the tribunal is the only real way to get it done effectively from both sides of the discussion.
Yeah, he can go along there with his representation, whoever Richmond decide to take along with him. They can go through the footage and they can walk everybody through it and let the panel, the tribunal panel, decide the right outcome.
So, Whitey, what we know from Bashir-Hooley is I don't think he'll plead not guilty from the apology and the way he spoke yesterday. So it really is now a matter of minimising its time on the sidelines from his campaign, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. And I was going to ask you a question because this falls into your genre as a former tribunal member.
Former pie eater.
Baguettes.
That's a bit flat. I'd be a bit flat by that anyway.
Delicious baguettes.
Does his character come into it at all with a penalty? Because it doesn't in a match review panel situation.
Yep.
It's ticking boxes. But when you go to the tribunal and bash a... I'm not going to preempt necessarily what he's going to say, but actually I'm going to. So he puts up his hand, says, look, I did the wrong thing. It's not what I intended, but it is what it is. I'm just putting my hand up and saying I'm going to take what comes to me and let my record speak for itself. Does that have the potential to make it, say, 4-3, or does that not come into it? It's purely based on the action.
His character doesn't. His record will. But how good a bloke he is doesn't play any part in it. So he can tell me as many stories as he likes and get as many character witnesses saying that he's the world's greatest man, but that will have little impact on the outcome from the tribunal's perspective. His record certainly will. Now, I think it's the first time he's been reported in his career, 158 games in or thereabouts, I think it might be. 158, yeah, it is.
What your record allows you to do is take that early plea. So you get your deduction then. So I think they'll judge the action.
Yep.
I think Jared Waitley described it really well last night. They'll judge the action, and then your record gives you that discount.
And he was right. I saw that last night. Mm. It was spot on. Mm. You get your outcome just on the facts of the,
yep.
the matter, and then you put into calculations any discounts or loading for bad record, depending on who you are. Now, I would imagine that Basher will get one less than perhaps the outcome will give him. Because of his record, that he hasn't been anywhere near involved in these type of activities through his 158 games. And I think that's fair enough. I think there should be a reward for someone who has been good, who has behaved themselves, that they do get some sort of discount if, in fact, it gets to that point. Now, I think it's 4-3.
Yep.
It's a pretty straightforward one for me.
Yep, I agree.
4-3. It's certainly not 3-2 because you can get two being as a careless. Careless contact with intentional and high, or with high and high, sorry. I think it's a 4-3 situation. I think we'll find that tonight. Without preempting, and I'm not involved these days, so I can say whatever the hell I like about the tribunal.
Didn't like the baguettes.
No, work life didn't help at the time last year. It was no good to me. But I think it's pretty straightforward, 4-3 for Basher.
And again, we're trying to protect Jimmy as much as he can because a lot of these cases, players have not accepted their penalties yet, so he can't talk about individual cases. So I just want to make that very clear. But Jimmy, an overall view, and this is to both of you as well, are you surprised that considering it was very public, the crackdown you were going to have on these stupid incidents, that there's still been so many of them that you have to look through?
Yes. The perfect world scenario is that I go in Monday and they say, turn around, guys, there's nothing to look at, or there's just, you know, what you say, we've said before, those clumsy football incidents where things have just gone wrong while you're trying to execute football acts. So, like, you might get a high contact for a bump or a sling tackle. But, look, I understand it's a pretty intense game and there's a lot of frustrations out there and people just don't think. And as we saw, Basher Hooley has played 11 years of football with never being reported and he just had a brain fade. Let's just put it what it is. And I understand that happens, but I guess the easy way, and we always say it, the easy way to avoid these things is just don't do the stupid stuff. But players will just, lose a little bit of that composure in the moment sometimes.
I imagine Brad Scott's annoyed at Ben Cunnington. He's found himself in this situation a few times. He's got a week hanging over his head now for his strike on Toby McLean. And I hadn't actually seen that one until last night after the panel had come out with their findings. I thought there was another one on Saturday night that was involved in that they were looking at. But it wasn't the one I saw. And that's a no-brainer. What was he doing?
I agree with you.
If I'm Brad Scott, I'm really annoyed at Ben Cunnington.
I mean,
really annoyed.
I just, you know, we thought there was going to be a situation that they were going to crack down on it. People are going to start losing games of footy for silly acts that, by sort of clamping down on it, players will start behaving themselves. Well, it hasn't happened.
Oh, I think there's been less. I think we've found there's less. We haven't seen as many, like, the jumperies.
No, that's true. You're right. The jumper stuff
has maybe the jumper punch. But there's still these... There's a few players on the weekend that treaded a very fine line.
Well, Ben Cunnington's treaded his, and he's got a one-match sanction with an early plea, if he likes. And Will Schofield is the other one that was a topic of discussion yesterday.
Yep.
With his forearm/elbow contact to the jaw of Clayton Oliver. It's an interesting one, that one, because I would have thought from straight away that if there ever was a case for insufficient force, that might have been it. Just from my vision that I saw, Jim, clearly the medical report suggested otherwise.
Yes, and you just nailed it right there, Halfie. Your vision, you might be on a black and white TV.
Which I am, 32 centimetres.
No HD.
Rank Arena.
No HD.
I don't have Rank Arena.
We've got to take into account medical reports because that goes into the box or the column of impact.
Were you surprised about the medical report, the detail of the medical report?
I'm not going to be questioning Melbourne's medical staff.
I was just asking.
No, and I'm just answering.
All right. Okay. Clayton Oliver has no case to answer for because the general, Whitey, I'll talk to you about this one, the general... Or a lot of the conversation was around the flop factor for Clayton Oliver, who seemed to be delayed in his reaction to the strike from Will Schofield and what that might have meant for the outcome of the case yesterday.
Yeah, but I think once the medical report comes back that he was treated and that there was some pain attached to
the
strike,
a lot of pain.
You've got to throw that out the door. You've got to go on the medical report.
As Jimmy said before, and he made a good point, if you don't do stupid stuff, you don't get yourself in that position. And Will Schofield will have a week off as a result.
Yeah, but he shouldn't be putting himself in that position, should he? At the end of the day, I think that it's just stupid. Just don't do it. It's pretty easy.
So could I suggest perhaps that the lowering of the threshold is a bit more extreme than others have thought?
No, because... It's game. It brings back to the point. It's not a part of our game.
You and I are on the same page.
I'm pointing at you, but I don't know why I'm pointing at you. People can't see that, so it doesn't make for good radio. But I'm pointing
at you. If you like, that's cool.
I'm shaking my finger like a school teacher at you.
We're 100% on the same page on this.
Exactly. But you just don't throw an elbow. And I know the whole throw it out, but it's not what we want part of our game. No part of our game's ever been where you walk up and you got your elbows and fists flying around. Whether it's low impact, high impact, medium impact, punching, elbowing is just not a part of it. And getting people in the chin.
Well, I think that pulling on a jumper of any colour in any league across the country is no excuse for that sort of contact anywhere. Doesn't matter what level of footy you're playing. Just because you pull on a footy jumper doesn't mean you can go around doing that.
Correct weight.
So you should be dealt with accordingly. It's an interesting time. Before we get back to that sort of shenanigan, Danny Pascoe Vale's given us a call on 1-300-652-927 with Whitey and Jimmy Bartel. Good morning, Dan.
Yeah, morning, Ralph. Whitey, Jimmy.
Morning.
Whitey, just got a question for you. I've heard some mail probably a week ago that Aaron Sandilands' season's actually over and the hamstring injury's a lot more serious than what the club are letting the public know.
Yeah, look, I haven't heard anything to that point. I know that he's obviously been struggling, but the feeling has been that almost each week he's going to be coming back. So I'm not entirely sure. It kind of depends a little bit, Dan, on what Fremantle and Rosslyn are going to choose to do. Are they going to play out the season, or are they going to sort of do what they did last year and start playing a lot more of the kids and start to reload for next year? So it's a little bit difficult to tell, but half they would have been pretty happy with... that
Darcy,
young ruckman,
Sean Darcy.
He did quite well.
Yeah, he did.
Some of them with little experience.
Yeah, he did. He's had a pretty good story too, I think, Sean Darcy, and performed admirably against the Cats down there in that pressure cooker on Sunday.
Falcons Footy Factory.
Oh, not another one. Yep. Sick to death of the Falcons Footy Factory.
Yeah, they grow him good. No, he was good, Darcy, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Young fellow. He looked pretty good.
What do they say? He looks big and raw.
I was annoyed with him late in the game when there was a couple of stoppages and he kept finding himself behind Butsarves in the contest, and I thought, this is... It's killing me. Get to the front, fella. This is your bread and butter. You've got to be getting the first hands on this. You're down. You've got to win this ball. So he annoyed me a little bit, but that'll come with time and craft for Sean Darcy.
He's a big lump.
Yeah, he is a big lump.
Sometimes it's very difficult to know what comes out of Perth because they do tend to play funny buggers at times. You think of what's happening with Josh Kennedy at the moment. That was going to be a 1 to 2 week calf injury.
We were all over that. We smelled a rat, didn't we?
He's not coming back this week, Josh. He won't play. Maybe the week after.
This 2 week calf injury has become a 6 week Achilles.
This is the Neil Balm special. 1 to 2 weeks away.
There's a text here from Kevin. He wants to know, do you get paid to be a match review panel member?
Not enough. Coming in here every week and get abuse from YouTube eggs. There's not enough money in the world.
It's not the MRP anymore. It's Bartels Boffins.
Boffins.
That's who you are.
No. I just tacked on to the, I think they were described as rat bags.
If you don't get 100, you're not getting enough for the heat you get. But there is a little clip.
Small amount.
Yes.
And plus you get a sandwich.
And a free sandwich.
A baguette.
A baguette. Beautiful sandwiches by Jason Johnson.
Oh, Jono brings in the food.
Jono brings in the food.
He's going well with his little
catering
empire.
We hope that answers your question, Kevin. There's a couple here also wanting to know about the Walter's knee.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Tell us about the Walter knee.
Yeah, he was found guilty of kneeing.
Yeah, he was given a fine, yes.
Yeah, that's still guilty, yeah, Daniel.
I'm just explaining to the listeners what happened.
And people, they brought in fines for little things like that. And he was intentional, correct?
It's intentional.
To the body,
seemed
correct?
Seemed to be intentional, yes.
To the body, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Low impact, correct. Wow.
Was there any provision?
What is it?
Was there any provision for
potential
for damage for more significant damage?
No,
no discussion about that.
No,
righto.
Hang on. Answer my question.
What?
What does that equal? Intentional.
It equals a fine.
Thank you.
The table of offences.
Thank you.
What are you asking me for?
Because I'm just looking at you, Whitey.
It's the rules.
It is.
Dan, by the way, give us a call back. You've got a Big Swing golf voucher coming your way. Indoor Golf Centre. They are ripper. State-of-the-art golf simulators. 2 hours of play for four players valued at $125. Big Swing Golf. It's golf, but not as you know it. Joe's in Essendon. Good morning, Joe.
Hi. I'm just inquiring about the penalty when you get the ball, they kick the ball out.
Yep.
It's a penalty. But when a player goes for a mark and another player runs in and just smashes the ball out on the full, Why isn't that a penalty?
Jim?
Because in the rules, you're allowed to still defend and punch the ball out in a marking contest. So that's the important thing for people to remember. If it's a marking contest, you're still allowed to spoil the ball, which goes out of bounds, which you're allowed to clear it wide to the boundary. If it's along the ground, it's a different matter. Does that make it clear? Joe, you still there?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I'm just confused. You can't kick it out. You can't do anything to that, but...
Oh, yeah.
That's deliberate, isn't it?
No, but you still got to give the defenders a chance to defend because pretty much all the other rules are stacked against them, to be honest. Like, if you have, they can't use the boundary as a way to defend, plus chopping the arms in the back, all sorts of things. You still got to allow them to spoil the ball and sort of clear the danger zone.
Yep. Joe, thank you for your call. You can go to Big Swing Golf as well and enjoy a couple of hours there with some friends. The magnificent indoor golf centres from Big Swing. A lot of people get annoyed by that. Joe's sentiment is a consistent theme.
Yeah, it's a good point Joe makes, but yeah, I think you still got to allow defenders some out, don't you, Wardy?
Yeah, and they've definitely loosened it over the last 4 or 5 weeks where they were at the start of the year. And as I said at the time, they're after a behavioural change from the way the game was played, and I think they've succeeded in that. But there were ones again on the weekend.
A couple
that
of dodgy ones
paid
on the weekend.
Yeah, they would have been paid 6-7 weeks
ago. The Marchbank one's the one that stands out anyone watching Carlton Richmond. That was a skill error, but early in the year they would have just gone freaky.
Now, well, I'm not saying
even the Stephen Hill one, just down at the Kettery. He's on his right foot, got pushed as he kicked from a stoppage trying to get it back into play. It dribbled out 30 metres down the line.
Oh, they pinged that one.
And they pinged him.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah. On his right foot, the left footer.
So they're more likely not to pay them than what they were 6-8 weeks ago, but you still get these ridiculous inconsistencies.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for your call. Pete's in Geelong. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, boys. Jimmy, do you think that no small forwards at the Cats at the moment, do you think that McCarthy, Parfitt and Cockatoo, get them going before the finals? I think they're the missing link, mate.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's probably the thing you were touching on there, they've all been injured. So they'd love a couple fit. Parsons is doing a good role filling in. It's almost playing, he's a bit taller, but he's playing sort of that small forward role. Yeah, look, they need one of them sort of back because they're that pressure forward who can apply a lot of heat on the opposition defenders coming out, which is important because opposition sides are very effective now off half back, aren't they?
Yep.
That's where a lot of sides set up their attacking play from the half back flankers. So, yeah, it'd be good if running into the finals, one of those three. Gregson was another one who's been pretty much missed all of footy last 18 months. So, unfortunately, their only injury seemed to be to the small forwards.
The same group, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's a pretty demanding role, the small forward, the way Geelong play it. They ask them to get up really high, so they almost get all the way into their back 50 to get involved in the link, the chain, and then even when the ball gets inside 50, they're supposed to be that, as they call that, fly pressure where they buzz around inside 50.
Bzz, bzz. Thanks for your call, Pete. Great to have you on board. Callaway Chrome Soft golf balls coming your way. A dozen of the best, if you don't mind. They are fantastic. The best golf ball
soccer ball
on
one.
Tour. No, don't get the soccer ball
get
one.
Get the soccer ball one.
Just looks odd.
Red and white.
Just get the normal white one.
Now, before we go to the 6:30 news, an amazing thing happened last night in the Women's World Cup, Australia versus the West Indies. West Indies won the toss and decided... They decided that Australia would bat first, and then they... They decided that they would bat first.
Yeah.
And then... I've changed my mind. We'll let you guys bat first. So they walk away, and they go, hang on a sec, what's going on here? What are you trying to do? And they suggested that they weren't allowed to change their minds.
They're not allowed.
They had to go back
what
to
are
what
they? That's
initially
good question.
Said.
What are the rules? You've played more cricket than both of us.
Well, no, that's what they said first.
It's first. Yep, whatever you said first. So the match referee had to step in and say, whoa, you said bat.
That would have been
first.
Funny.
I'm pointing at you again.
But both sides walking out with their pads on. It's like, you know, junior footy, you flip the coin, you go back to the group.
You both go the same way. I can't remember.
I have played a cricket final where both teams had two men go out to bat with pads on.
Is that right?
Yep.
It's an unusual way to go into
one
bat pad.
One thing and one thought the other at the toss, and they've both gone out with
Well bats. Done, by the way, Nicole Bolton made an unbeaten century for the Australian women's cricket team last night, 107 from 116. Elise Perry came in to finish it off, but Beth Mooney at the top of the order as well. Made 70 off 85 the first
girl.
Wicket. My girl Beth, who's a star. First wicket was for 171, chasing 204. So never in doubt for the girls. Well done to them. Kicked off their campaign beautifully in the Cricket World Cup. Ashley Barty, who's in career best form, and she joins us on The Breakfast Club on RSN 927. Good morning, Ash.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on any time of the year, but you are in some pretty good form in singles and doubles at the moment. You must be as confident as you've ever been. Am I right?
Yeah, it's been nice to be able to play well, especially on the grass, and leading up to Wimbledon. But it's just been nice to win a few matches for sure.
Well, you had a great week at Birmingham last week, only a couple of days ago, in both the singles and the doubles. I'll talk more about the doubles shortly. But you took on Petra Kvitova in the final and took out the first set. What were you thinking after you got the first set?
Oh, I think I was still pretty clear and knew what I had to do, but Petra came out firing at the start of the second and really put me under the pump and sort of showed that the true champion that she is.
I've been grumpy the last couple of days, Ash, because I've had no sleep thanks to you watching you play all your matches. What was it like? I couldn't believe that first set, the composure that you showed. How nervous were you taking on a two-time Wimbledon champion in a final?
Oh, I don't think nerves. It was just exciting to be able to get the chance to play against Petra again. She's obviously been through a bit of a tough trot, and it was just nice to see her back out on court. And I was just really excited. I'd had a great week, and for me it was sort of a win-win. I can go out there and just play with freedom and try and play well.
What I want to know is how intimidating is it playing someone that hits the ball as hard as she does? Because you could just sort of see the match starting to turn and you found it maybe a little bit difficult to dictate as well as you did in the first set as she started to find her rhythm. Is it an intimidating process?
Not really intimidating, but she certainly does hit a very big ball and she can put you on the back foot very early in rallies, and I think that's what she was able to do really well in the second and third set. And when she finds her range, she's pretty hard to push off the baseline. And yeah, I wasn't really in control for much of that, much of the back end of the match, really.
How do you plan for that, Ash? Do you find you have to find a warm-up partner who smashes the ball, try and replicate what's going on?
No, I just try and keep my processes as normal as possible. But, you just sort of, you have the 5 minutes in the warm-up before the match to get used to it, but you just got to, I don't know, just get ready and try and prepare as best you can.
So it didn't go your way in that final against Kvitova, 4-6, 6-3, 6-2 for Kvitova. So what do you learn? Upon reflection, do you analyse the match at the end of it and go through some learnings with your coaching? What happens from there?
Yeah, we have a quick chat about it and sort of look at the things that we could have done better. But, you know, I had a chat with my coach and we both thought we played a really good match. We had a reasonably clean stat sheet and I sort of did what I could, but at the end of the day, Petra was just too good. And sometimes you just got to tip your hat to your opponent.
Well, what you did do, you must be very pleased because you made her play her guts out. She's pulled out of Eastbourne with an abdominal strain. So literally you made her play her guts out to beat you.
Well, it's always nice to push someone, but you never want to see him pull out of a tournament. But hopefully for her, it's just precaution before Wimbledon.
So you're now up to 54 in the world, Ash. That's getting to some pretty serious numbers now. How proud are you of how you've come back into the sport and the success you've had to this point?
It's just been really nice to be able to play consistent tennis throughout the year I think it's a, you know, it's amazing to think that 12 months ago we'd only just started playing singles again. So it's, you know, a big thank you, I suppose, to my coach and my team for helping me set the foundation. And now we've just been able to go out there, relax, play with freedom and play some good tennis.
Apart from being a little bit older, what's the difference second time around to the approach you've got on the game and perhaps yourself?
I think I obviously learnt a lot from my first time playing and touring, and I was still quite young, and now I'm able to, I suppose, learn from those experiences and try and deal with the pressures better. But I'm just really enjoying my tennis and I'm playing well. You know, we're able to just go out there and relax and play. And I think, you know, obviously the good results help as well. But we've just been able to enjoy our time while we're travelling and just, yeah, really go out there and have some fun.
Matthew Boyd from the Western Bulldogs in the Inner Sanctum on the Breakfast Club. And he's back again this morning. Good morning, Boydie.
Good morning, boys. Great to be. I think I can take your Inner Sanctum to the Footscray Bulldogs this week, so that'll be nice.
Yes, a little bit of VFL activity in your world, which is okay, but it is a challenge. And I want to ask you about that straight up. How big a challenge is it mentally at the moment for you, considering you are playing VFL footy and not AFL footy?
Yeah, look, initially it was a bit of a challenge, and I think just being able to process that news and do it quickly enough to get you back on the park is an interesting it's an interesting sort of process I had to go through. I hadn't been through that for a number of years. I think it was like 13 or 14 years since I played VFL footy.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's been a long time, but you know, you can look at it. You can look at it from a couple of different angles, can't you? You can look at it like, oh, you've been dropped and the world's going to end and, you know, we're all here to play AFL footy, and there's no doubt about that. But you can look at it through another, you know, perspective of, well, I can grow from this, I can learn, and I can help my young teammates grow and learn. And I think if you take that angle, then, you're halfway there.
Mm. Can you just take people through how that conversation happens? Is it Bevo just seeks you out in the hallway and go, can we have a quiet chat? Or do you avoid him because you think something might be coming down the pipe? But just talk people through how that happens. They probably aren't aware, you know, you're an experienced player, how he'd go about having this discussion with you.
Oh, look, it was a pretty simple conversation, really. Mm. Just got me before training and said, you know, you're out this week. And I was like, okay. He said, yeah, so you just need to process that and train well. And
does he give you any instruction, though? Like, if you go back, you know, play well, I want this, I want that, you'll be back in. Is there any instructions when you're going back?
Oh, there's always instructions from the coaches, and a lot of the times that instruction comes from your line coach as well, because they critically analyse every aspect of your game and of your role as a defender. So, yeah, that instruction comes a lot from those line coaches. But, you know, there's always feedback and no one's ever too old or played too many games to get feedback and to keep their game growing.
Is there any regret at all that you played on? Has that come into it at all? Because you were wavering as to whether you would play on again this year. Does that moment come to you and think, oh, geez, it would have been easy just to not play on?
There's no regrets whatsoever from my perspective playing on it. It might look to the outside world like, oh, I should have retired at the end of a premiership year and gone out on top and as an All-Australian and all that sort of thing. I came into the season with my eyes wide open to the possibilities of what might happen. I knew it wasn't going to... you hope it goes as well as last year, but in reality, you know, you probably know that it's not going to go as well. So my eyes were open to the fact that I could play VFL footy. I could have some injury concerns and miss periods of the season with whatever might come as an ageing athlete, but I've got no regrets whatsoever. I mean, I couldn't not go on after last year. Don't give up while you've still got something to give, and I've certainly got something to give. And if that's at VFL level for a while, then that's at VFL level. And I can invest in my teammates and try and teach them how to go about being a professional football player.
This is quite inspiring listening to this, to be honest. The last one is the 300, and because a lot of people have been talking about it. It's just sitting there in the background, but you've still got quite a few more games that you have to play to get to that magical figure.
And again, I didn't go into this season with a goal to play 300 games. That would have been a byproduct of, you know, things going well and going right, and having a bit of luck along the way. And I've had the chat to Bevo about that as well. I said, don't play me just to get to 300, because I don't want to be that burden to the footy club, and I don't want to be that burden to my teammates. It's a great number, and you know, obviously Jim got there, and
he was lucky.
Yeah, he was a pretty ordinary player, wasn't he? Yeah.
299 average ones. I played one good one.
But you know, it's just a number. At the end of the day, it's a number, and yeah, you're right. I've still a lot of footy to go. I think I'm on 290, so 10 games to go, and I think there's only 10 games left in the year, isn't there? So, or nine games
round
left.
About. Yeah,
nine games left. So things would have to go extraordinarily well from here on in for me to get to 300, but it's not a focus. And I didn't play for that. I played for the enjoyment of playing footy, and us, these boys here, you're retired a long time. So I just want to enjoy what I've got left in my footy career.
There has been talk about being more like the Big Brother house than the kennel in recent times.
The
factions and the spirited debate and all that sort of thing. People getting grumpy in the middle of winter.
Is there a diary room?
I'm not sure. Mm. I'll open the door. What's going on?
Has there been any talk of infighting this week?
No, I think it was all done last week.
Yeah, it was all done after we lost. And when you win, it seems to go away magically. So I think sometimes people in the media, present company excluded, try and make stuff up.
I'm not media, half media.
No, present company excluded, mate. Yeah. We're excluded. Don't even need to go in there.
We're quarantined.
We're the good guys.
I think sometimes people just close their eyes and throw a dart at a board and see if it lands on something. And there's no real accountability to any of those statements that people throw out there. So there's certainly no infighting at our footy club. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that this playing group is one of the tightest playing groups I've ever been involved with. It's the tightest playing group I've ever been involved with. And I've played in some great sides and had some great mates, but this is a bunch of boys who really care and love each other deeply. And it sounds a bit fluffy, but that's just... That's probably what won us a flag last year, is, you know, guys' connection to each other and care for each other, and nothing's changed.
Has there been challenging conversations because you haven't been playing as well as a team as you would like to get the best out of each other?
Well, there's a demand for high standards, and I think with performance and success, those standards go up a little bit, and rightly so they should go up. And we all hold each other to those high standards. But it's been no more challenging conversations than what we had last year or the year before or what we'll have going forward. And when you expect high performance from your teammates, then you have to have those conversations at times. But it hasn't been anything out of the ordinary that all other football clubs will be having.
Has it angered the club, what's been said about it, or is it just water off a duck's back?
Well, it hasn't angered the players. The players just laugh at it, really, because it is laughable, some of those suggestions that the players are fighting with each other. You know, guys who spend all day, every day together, who are in each other's pockets all the time. You know, they're like brothers, these guys. It's just, they just laugh at it and they make a joke of it, because that's what it is.
Scotty Gullen has joined us from the Herald Sun and the Australian. Another back page story for Scotty yesterday on the Australian. He's really embracing this national platform for all the latest news in the world of the AFL. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Daniel. Did they run Bonnie Tyler in the Australian newspaper? It's one of my best match reports ever. You would have read it word for word.
No, I didn't read it. I saw your name.
I know Adam did.
No, I didn't read it.
Okay. James would have.
I always read your work, Scott.
I got Bonnie Tyler in.
I was busy with Greg Venom Denham. I was reading Greg's work.
Okay.
He's all over it. He was yesterday. Had a good day yesterday. Big Greg Venom Denham. Love his work. Always.
Good luck.
What do you mean, good luck?
No, I love Genghis. He's one of the greats.
Greg Venom Denham now. He's not Genghis anymore. He's
Sorry,
Venom. Now, Scotty, there is plenty to talk to you about in the world of footy, because we had a busy weekend. We had a dramatic weekend. Incidents aplenty.
Yes, there was.
Talk to us, Gullen.
Including the shot clock fiasco.
Yes.
Oh, shot clock. Well, this is an odd one, because our man Sean Higgins, RSN's own,
mm-hmm.
he should have had an idea in his own head without the shot clock, shouldn't he? Oh, I've been standing here for 2 minutes. Maybe I should kick.
Yeah, but have the AFL ticked off on it? You're aware of this?
Yeah, the AFL have said the controlling umpire, it's not his job. It's the bloke 40 metres away who did...
Well, that can't be right.
Well, they say that he's got a lot of concentrate on, and one of them is don't go over the mark, so that's all he can concentrate on, Jim. He can't do two things at once.
Oh, my goodness.
So the guy 100 metres away, it's his job to know, oh, we're about 30, we're about 38 seconds, play on, play on, play on.
Clearly they've said that logic out loud and said that doesn't make sense.
Well, they came out yesterday.
They put it in print.
A man 100 metres away is the one controlling.
Correct. The countdown.
Not the man 10 metres away.
No.
Just say that out loud.
Yeah, no.
How silly that sounds.
The job of the umpire on the mark is watching the mark and the protected area around the player with the ball.
And can't count to 30.
No.
So he can't tap his head and rub his
tummy. But he's got someone in his ear telling him the time.
That's three things. So you can do two, can't do the third. His mate, 100 metres away, is counting. One cat dog, two cat dog, three cat dog. And when he gets to 30, he tells Jake Stringer, mate, go and tackle him. You beauty.
So my understanding, when the shot clock situation is there, we've got not in the last 2 minutes, but every other aspect of the game.
Yeah, you can watch it.
As soon as you move, the clock stops and no one can come near you.
You start your stride in.
Yes. So when Sean Higgins saw the...
He stood like a statue.
Yeah, well, he was still processing how long he had trying to work out what was going on. What,
30 seconds out.
When he started his momentum forward when he had the shot, after they called play on, it was game on anyway. So there wasn't...
Play on had already been called before he'd started his momentum gaining.
But he wouldn't have...
By the umpire 40 metres away, not the one 10 metres away.
If the umpire throwing his arms up 50 metres away, he's not going to be able to see that either.
Correct. So the guy he was looking at was just like a statue like him, just going, yeah, it's all good.
So they've come out and they said they're happy with the no 2 minutes thing in the last 2 minutes of each quarter.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean,
I don't.
You want it the whole time.
Makes no sense.
If you've got a shot clock, you've got a shot clock from the first minute to the final minute.
Do we need a shot clock at all?
Well, apparently we do, and they've started it for the rest of the game, so why would you not have it for 8 minutes of a game, which makes no sense to me. The other thing is, the other complication with this is at the MCG, the Tissot Countdown, around the boundary, there is a clock.
Yeah, for the last 3 minutes.
For the last two or three minutes.
I think they turn off last minute and a half, maybe.
No, that's inside the last minute. I've seen it. Certainly to the minute.
It's probably sponsor-driven.
It's a revenue opportunity for the AFL. They've got a relationship with Tissot, which is fine.
Different rules.
But you're getting a different scenario depending on the venue you're playing, which is unacceptable.
It's similar to the cameras in the goalpost.
It's unacceptable.
If you can't have it for all venues, you don't have it. It has to be consistent across all venues.
That's how they roll.
But it's actually important for the integrity of the game.
Competition, absolutely.
If there's one rule at the 12-minute mark of the second quarter, it should be the same rule at the 29-minute mark of the last quarter. It should always be the same. So, because what has happened is, with a shot clock, players are now conditioned that they go back to the top of their mark, they look at the time, and they're like, I've got 17 seconds here to actually compose myself before I start walking in. Now, that's what happened with Sean Higgins. He looked up at the clock and thought, oh, there's no clock. What am I going to do here? I'll have to wait for the umpire to tell me, and obviously he couldn't hear the umpire.
You give me 5 seconds.
But the players have now been conditioned to something that is now part of our game, which is a shot clock. To take it off, what's the difference going to be?
Well, no, there's no difference. It's a silly decision in the first place. It was reactionary to one incident.
But you've got 30 seconds. So you've got 30 seconds to kick the football at the 30-minute mark, just as you have at the... It's not like the umpire is going to have a different interpretation of the rule and say, oh, we're in the last 2 minutes here. You've only got 15. You've still got 30.
Yeah.
Nothing's changing.
It's all making sense to me, Adam. But headquarters, who do love the program, and good morning, headquarters, they don't quite see where we're going with that, which is unfortunate.
Different one, Scotty.
Yes.
Any room on the bandwagon for Demon supporters?
Are they up and about?
Yeah, I'm not on it.
Oh, what?
No, I'm not on it. I appreciate they're a very nice football team who's improved dramatically. They've got a good coach who's not afraid to throw magnets around, where there's a lot of coaches in this competition who sit like statues and just watch.
Yep.
He's very good at
taking their full 30.
Yes. The comparisons to the Bulldogs are obvious, because we all want that to happen every year, really. I like them, but I'm not a premiership bandwagon person. Well, are you gentlemen caught up in this hype?
Have you got a premiership favourite then?
No, I'm very wide. I'm not a GWS man either.
So I think that's why people are so high on the Demons.
I agree.
Because no one's really streaking away from the pack. So they're putting the Demons in that mix.
I think there's two sets of people out there. It's the GWS will win. It's over the line. Let's just turn up. Even though they've got injuries, they'll get them back. Not an issue. Or it's as wide open as ever because I'm not believing in the GWS. And I don't believe in GWS right now. So I'm open to anyone.
So they're Demons then?
But I'm not as in love as the gushing of the Demons. I'm not quite comfortable.
Circumstances can change. I thought at the start of the year that the Giants were 4, 5, 6 goals better than everybody else. But that was on the proviso that they had a healthy list. And they don't. And they've now lost another player, Tim Taranto.
Yeah, he's gone for 8 weeks.
You know, Griffin's probably not going to get back. Delidio probably won't play. So circumstances have changed. Then even when Canelio comes back, he's not going to be the player he would be if he played the whole year.
He would have played but 6 games or something.
I think Melbourne can win it. Because they've got almost all the components there to suggest that they could win it. It might be a year too soon, but I think they're in for some very successful times.
Yeah, I've got no doubt.
We briefly touched on this yesterday. Jimmy and Whitey are a bit more buoyant than perhaps you and I.
Ah, see? The form, you and me, we
see.
Yeah,
form ladder. See, the form ladder says, they're going okay.
The highlighter just says,
Okay, I'll throw this to all of you. How do you judge when a team might be ready? Is it based purely and simply on playing good footy and wins and losses, or is it the ability, like Melbourne, to come from behind to beat Adelaide in Adelaide, to come from behind to beat West Coast at West Coast? Is it the characteristics of the team, or is it just purely wins and losses?
No, it's not. It's a combination of things. You've got to be able to win to put yourself in position to get the best position for a finals campaign. But you've shown traits through the year that you were able to deal with all situations effectively. Then that's a massive tick in a premiership box, if you like.
So that's what's winning me over, that they can go to Perth and come from behind and win without Nathan Jones, Jesse Hogan,
Jack
Watson, and say Angus Brayshaw and
Max
Gawn playing his first game
back.
What about a finals type set up forward half? Yeah, Jesse Hogan's going to come back, but he hasn't played outstanding in the last 18 months to suggest he's the answer. What's their forward setup?
Well, it's the forward setup they got with Jesse Hogan.
Yeah, well, what is it? Jack Watts. Then these other Hannon, all these kids who are
Jeffy,
doing...
Jeffy's doing
nice things.
A great job.
But the Bulldogs won a premiership.
I know,
the Bulldogs
exactly.
won 4 consecutive finals with
they
a
didn't
hybrid
have forward.
Type forward.
Yeah, they can flip Peterson or McDonald as another tall in there. If they want to go a bit taller, they can play a bit smaller where essentially Petrarca is your pseudo third tall.
Yep. They're probably the Bulldogs of 2015 where they'll get into a final series and give it a good crack.
Yeah.
It's probably a year too soon, but I reckon the top of the competition has come off. So I think it genuinely is anybody's, and it's who's going to be healthy and playing good footy at the right time.
The way they move the ball, they don't need to be superstar forwards because they just dice teams open and create space and take on the kick that a lot of teams wouldn't take on in their forward half of the ground, which opens up some possibilities for players to have an impact without having to be megastars to do it.
They're exciting.
Hamish Hartlett has joined us on the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. Good morning, Hamish.
Good morning, boys. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, buddy. Appreciate your time. A good win on the weekend. I reckon it was a danger game, the way the Pies have been playing, how consistent they've been, how competitive they've been, but you did a bit of a number on them. You must have been wrapped with how you played as a team.
Yeah, we thought it was probably one of our most consistent games all round, that we defended really well. Offensively, we got going a bit as well, and the guys around stoppage were outstanding. So when you, Collingwood, were in some great form, I think they've played some really good footy the last 6 or 7 weeks. So, potentially it was a bit of a danger game for us, but one of our best performances for 4 quarters that we've put together this year.
And it's been a good year too. It's been a much better year than the last couple after the previous year, 3 years ago, being a really good one. The last couple of years have been a little bit off for the Power. What's been different this year? What's the change?
Oh, look, obviously the coaching staff reflected on last year and the year before pretty heavily and thoroughly, and identified some areas that we need to improve on in our game. And I think really what we've done is we've really stripped our game back and simplified it as much as possible, which has made things really easy for the boys. The boys are really understanding of all their roles that they need to play from week to week, and then you just go out there and and execute that as well as you possibly can, which we've been able to do for most games this year. So I think just a really simple game plan that we've been able to produce most weeks has been the major difference.
Just want to touch on a couple of guys and their roles within the side. Paddy Ryder, missing last year, he's just been enormous for you guys, and around the stoppages, he always gets his hand on it first.
Yeah, you're spot on, Jimmy. He's been a huge addition to us this year. We knew how he was for us a couple of years ago, and to lose him last season was tough for us. But I think not only the stuff that he does on field, which this year's been exceptional, but just having him back around the club, he's a pretty lovable character. He's always, you know, really positive and up and about, and you know, he's just a great guy to have around the footy club. So he's been huge for us this year, and he's got a little bit more to do for us, so hopefully he can continue his good form.
And we've almost seen a swapping of game time of where they play, with Robbie Gray a lot more forward and the Chad in the midfield.
Yeah, that's right. He's probably has been looking to add another string to his bow, Chaddy, for a year or so, and that opportunity has arisen for him this year, with Robbie spending a bit more time forward, and it's an absolute nightmare of a matchup for any opposition player with Robbie Gray sitting one-on-one forward, and having that luxury of Chad coming through the midfield is great for us as well. But I think, you know, probably adding Sam Powell-Pepper and Brad Ebert into that midfield rotation has also helped those guys too.
Just on Brad Ebert, he's sort of gone back to the Brad Ebert of old, of just going and hunting the footy and playing more an inside mid-role and really relishing that. He's one of those key reasons why you have improved, Hamish, because of the role he's playing. Is that fair?
Yeah, no doubt. He's arguably having his best season of his career so far, and he's spot on. It's as an inside midfielder, and we probably identified that we needed some bigger boys around the inside of the stoppage. It seems like each year the midfielders get bigger and bigger, so it's good to have him in the mix, and he wins plenty of contested footy. He's a good overhead mark, and everyone knows his running power as well. So he's having a standout year, and again, 8 or 9 games to go, and he's got another few big efforts in him, I'm sure.
I'm not sure whether it's a sacrificial role or it's just the way it's happening, but with Powell-Pepper and Ebert and Ollie and these guys playing so well in the midfield, your skipper's finding himself at half forward. That's a luxury.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of that sort of comes down to how lucky we've been with our injury list as well, guys, this year. I mean, we've had, I think, the biggest injury toll that we've had this year is probably this week. We've got 4 or 5 guys that are going to be assessed to play this week. Otherwise, we've pretty much gotten through injury-free, and, you know, that's allowed us to put the guys in positions that we prefer. So those guys you mentioned in the midfield, and then Boakye, you know, it is an incredibly selfless role that he's playing at half forward. There's a lot of running that he does that goes unrewarded and unseen, probably from the viewers on TV. But he knows how much we appreciate his efforts from week in and week out, and he'll stick his hand up and play whatever role that Kenny and the team needs him to play. So he's been outstanding for us this year again.
The dream of playing in the NFL these days for young Aussie boys is very much alive, and the dream for playing for the Dallas Cowboys would be absolutely top of the charts. America's team, they call the Dallas Cowboys.
If you think Collingwood is big in Australia, times that by 1,000.
And that's what you get when you head into the Dallas Cowboys change room. Just like Sam Irwin-Hill, who's got that opportunity in the NFL this season. He joins us a couple of days back in Australia. He's been good enough to jump on the line this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me in bright and early this morning, guys.
Thanks for waking up bright and early for us, Sam.
Not a problem.
We think that's fantastic. What is it like walking through the doors of the Dallas Cowboys? You heard Jimmy say that, you know, it's Collingwood times 1,000 in terms of respect and admiration and fear from opposition and, of course, the status that they hold in the NFL. Walking through those doors, what's that like?
Well, you know, like Texas takes a lot of pride in the star, you know. It's America's team, obviously. It's one of those things, you know, you grow up playing American football, and this is one of the teams that, you know, you sort of watch on TV a lot, gets commercialised a lot. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I've been working really, really hard for it. So you walk in there and you hold your head high, and you're privileged to be in there with all the other guys. And, yeah, it's just an amazing camaraderie, an amazing energy around the facility. And, you know, what they've got set up there is honestly one of the best facilities in the world. So it's amazing.
You're a Bendigo lad and obviously involved with the Pioneers. Was NFL always sort of on your mind or on your radar, or did you get, how'd you get introduced to punting?
So obviously I was doing Pro Kick Australia.
Chappie.
With Nathan Chapman and John Smith down there. Obviously, you know, Chappie, his family come from Bendigo as well. So we had a connection there. You know, he obviously saw that I had a good kicking ability. I think one of the first things he told me was, you know, you have the ability to be able to kick for a scholarship and be you can go to a university. And not just that, but potentially play in the NFL one day. And just hearing those words coming out of his mouth, you know, put the belief in my head that, you know, I could go and pursue such a thing in a different country.
Every time we see a player who can kick the ball a long distance in footy, we think, well, he can go to the NFL. But what's the different mechanics? Even the ball is completely different to, you know, launch into the air.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of those things, you know. I look a lot of the you know, the Australian rules guys go in and the way they kick the ball and the mechanics and the fundamentals are very similar, but at the same time, you know, very, very different, because it's a specialised position and it's the one thing that we have to focus on when we go out there, because, you know, we only get 4 or 5, 6 games. So you want to make them the best that you possibly can, and it's one of those things. You know, I have to focus on, you know, punting a ball, but also, you know, kicking the ball off the ground too, because I do kick off. So it's one of those things, you know. So, you know, I just have to put everything in order and yeah, hope for the best. So.
And did you have to go through a kickoff against another Cowboy hopeful?
So Chris Jones is there. Chris Jones is the punter. Dan Bailey is the kicker. And they've been there for a while, veterans, and got the utmost respect for those guys. So learning a lot, but at the same time, you know, competing for the job. And, we'll take it every day at a time. So,
can you just take people through the pressure of having a punt? You only get maybe 2 to 5 a game, and people have pressure goal-kicking in AFL footy, but you only get maybe 2 kicks a game. You miss one, all the pressure's on you.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You sort of, it's a lot more mental than it is physical. You know, everything's done throughout the week to train yourself, put yourself in that position. Then you just have to go out there, you know, come game time and make sure that, you know, the kicks you get, you know, you're going to put your team in the right position for the defense to take over. And you know, you only get a couple shots, so you're going to make them your best. So that's what I've been focusing on. That's what I've been, revolving my craft around, and just developing that consistency within the American football punt. So
that was the best of the Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.